Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Today, we are going to dive into a subject that we've skirted a little bit over the last year or so, which is process before progress. Now, when we talk about the investment management process that they have at Nepsis with their Invest with Clarity roadmap, how do we break this down, brother?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the introduction of process before progress. We actually just trademarked this. I really believe that this is the foundational component of successful investing. And the whole idea behind it, Matt, is that in order to see the results that you see of your investments, there has to be a process that gets you those results. In other words, results just don't fall out of the sky and, oh, gee, I've got these results. Now, do people get lucky? Do people buy Tesla at $200 and see it at $1,600 and say, yeah, I knew it was going to go $1,600? I doubt anyone thought that. But at the end of the day, sometimes you can get lucky. And we've gotten lucky. I'd be the first guy to admit it. But the luck is created from a process, whether you're just guessing at a stock, you like the company, or it's part of what we have, which is an integrated investment process of every position in our portfolio. There is a process before progress. You've heard me say many times before that no one position should make or break the portfolio. Every position in the portfolio should be owned for a very specific reason to accomplish a long-term objective, right?
Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to pause you there, brother, because let's use the Tesla as a great example, right? So you got into Tesla at $200 and it's, well, I know, I sure didn't either. Somebody did. Who got lucky anyway. And so now it's up to what, 1600, I think it was up to 2000. So it's something insane like that, right? What happens when an individual luck sort of position takes over your portfolio? What do you do about that? How do you deal with that when it comes to the process, if that does happen to you?
Well, this is where the behavioral science component of it comes in. As if people have listened to a lot of our podcasts, there are multiple themes that go through it. And one of those themes is the behavioral science, the biases, the behavior of investment making decisions. And the whole idea of a process before the progress is you want to know what your buy discipline is. You want to know what your sell discipline is. You want to know that when you are wrong, notice I say when, not if you are wrong, you know what the maximum impact on a negative standpoint is on your asset allocation, right? And so I've seen a lot of people make lots of money. During the 1990s, during the heyday of the tech bubble, a lot of people made money super quick and they lost it just as quick, because as they watched it go straight up and they were euphoric, as they watched it go down, they waited, hoped, and prayed that it would bounce back and go back up. That is a function of not having a fundamental process in place to help you achieve the progress that you want to achieve. Never get emotional about a company or a stock. Never get emotional about an investment decision. It should be the process that you have created that gives you the confidence to make the decisions that you make. And I think to a certain degree, Matt, this is one of the reasons why during pullbacks, during corrections, we have a very specific process that we engage during corrections of this nature. And every correction that we've been a part of that's been deep, whether it's been the financial crisis, whether it's been COVID, whether it's been 9/11, we have made some significant investment decisions that turned out to be tremendous investments. However, just because we have a great buy discipline doesn't mean that we don't have a great sell discipline as well, not getting emotionally tied to the company that you're going to invest in. And so when you talk about this idea of process before progress, there are multiple components to it. There is the scientific component, and there's the behavioral component. There's the buy discipline. There is the sell discipline. There is the four keys to your successful investing: your investment philosophy, your investment strategy, your flexibility and transparency, and others. All those things I just named to talk to you are part of our process that enables us to have seen the progress we have seen in our clients' portfolios, which have no guarantees, but have seen significant performance over the last 20, 25 years that we've worked.
All right, Mark. So when your clients are getting trade confirmations and different things like that, they're going to see that you're selling stock A because it's gone up, right? And we know that we're going to be able to take profits in order to buy stock B because of that stock is on sale. When you talk about this transparency and how you communicate with your clients, you've said in the past that you don't get a lot of calls when those things happen. But I've talked to other advisors who say, when I do stuff like that, I get calls all the time. How do you communicate that to your clients so that they understand what's going on with these trades in their portfolios?
Yeah, it's a great, great question. We believe that we've broken down investing to the core on the idea of science versus behavior, the psychology of investing versus the empirical component of investing. The empirical stuff is the scientific part. It's the numbers. It's the bits and bytes. The behavioral aspect, we believe, is more important because we believe it's the behavioral aspect that gets investors to make poor decisions more than the scientific data, because scientific data, for the most part, is going to be fairly factual. Behavioral data is going to be interpretation or opinion. So how do you minimize opinions to make sure you're not wrong, right? In other words, how do you mitigate risk and maximize your opportunities? We really believe this is one of the impetus or one of the core foundations to the idea of Nepsis, to the idea of ultimate clarity, to the idea of investing with clarity. It's very simple. When an investor sees the activity that's going on in their portfolio, they see the businesses they're buying. They see the businesses they're selling. And we communicate with our advisors. If we liquidate out of an entire position, we tell our advisors this is why. So if a client calls, they can answer it. But generally speaking, we are selling a portion of or buying a portion of something because that's a function of the buy discipline and the sell discipline, i.e., it is a function of the process. And so behaviorally speaking, Matt, so this could get really into some deep psychology stuff, but in the behavioral aspect of investing, let's take Square for a minute, okay? So Square, we filed our SEC filings. People can see how much Square we owned. They can see we sold some Square during the last quarter, but Square went from $35 a share up to 100, up to 116, up to 130, up to 156 from March of this year. Now, full disclosure, I got lucky. I'm not going to say I got lucky. I mean, we were long-term investors. It just moved a lot quicker than we would have thought. These kinds of things are going to happen during stressed out periods in the market, or if particular news or sectors become popular. You have to have the discipline in place to understand a potential disconnect. Square started the year at $60 a share, goes up to 95, then goes to 35, then goes to 156, all in 6 months. I mean, that's not rational, right? So part of it was the conviction we had to own Square was high. So when we initiated our position, the percentage owned in the client's portfolio was fairly high relative to the overall allocation. And so as that stock moves up and becomes a larger percentage of the portfolio, the discipline, the process you have to stick to, you have to take profit. It forces us to take profit. In other words, it forces us to lock in gains and buy other things that are on sale because that's the process. That's what the investment policy states, right? So when investors who continually get our quarterly updates, who listen to our podcast. And by the way, thanks for the help on the podcast. I just saw our recent podcast numbers. They're growing pretty substantially. Actually, I was a little surprised. That's kind of nice. But when you listen to these podcasts and you become more educated as an investor and you understand the importance of process and understand the importance that you're investing in a business, it's really important that you understand the reasons behind the decisions you're making. And that is why we believe trademarking the phrase process before progress is so important to investing.
How much under the hood can you show us about the process? So when you're choosing a company, and we'll use Square as a good example, did you enter into that because it was a market niche that you thought was going to continue to grow? Because, I mean, Square is a very, very easy to use way to take credit cards, right? It's super, super, super simple. It's literally plug and play. There are other ones on the market out there. How do you, I mean, you said you got lucky, but you didn't get lucky because it's part of the process. How does one make those sorts of decisions?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me say, when I say lucky, that's probably the wrong word. I was surprised to see it move as fast as
okay.
it did.
I like surprise. That's better. Yeah.
And sometimes those things happen and you have to be prepared for that. Just as sometimes you can be surprised and you can buy a company and it goes down 50% in the next year. You may be surprised by that, but surprise gets diminished by the utilization and the execution of the process, i.e. process before progress. So getting back to your point with Square, so getting under the hood a little bit, there's a couple of things without getting super detailed on this. Number one, I believe that the majority of the companies that we own, not all, because we own everything for a specific reason, but many of the companies that we own, we look for the economic moat. We look for the moat, to use the little Warren Buffett terminology, how strong is the moat? In other words, how strong is the competitive position versus everybody else? Now, Square stock is moving up certainly on their technology and credit cards, but they're also filed for being a bank, and they've created some other technology to help businesses be successful. So there's multiple reasons why Square may have gone up a lot, including the fact that the whole sector was strong. Now, that leads to the next point. When we, besides moat, we are going to look at top down versus bottom up. We look at both. Top down is, let's look at the industries that we believe are going to be the strongest for the next 3, 5, and 10 years, the industries. And then once we determine what those industries are, then let's do the bottom up work. Let's go look in and see management, balance sheet, the economic moat, the competition, how they're growing earnings, how their utilization of capital is, whole list of things that we look at. So it's the it's top down and bottom up. We as a firm, we're very particular about the kinds of businesses we want to own. And I'm getting more under the hood than probably I want to get under the hood, but I'll just say this. We don't go out and just go buy retailers. We don't go out and just buy oil companies. We don't go out and just buy gold stocks. I don't care how hot gold is for a little while. I don't care how hot a retailer is for a while. I'm more interested in businesses that have a competitive advantage that is going to enable them to continue to grow their earnings over time. Now, there are other variables that go into that process. There's reasons why we own a company like Chubb or a company like AIG or Visa, MasterCard, or Square for that matter. There are certain businesses, and insurance is one of them, that are just great long-term businesses. And those are far less cyclical in nature, if you will, than maybe airlines or retail or energy or, you know, other commodities, so to speak. Now, we owned a lot of energy before the financial crisis. We owned gold. We owned copper. We owned a lot of these commodities, but the economy and the markets were very different than they are now. That's the top-down component. Looking at the next 3, 5, 10 years, what do we see are those trends? And laying our stake in the sand and understanding that we think that these trends over the next 3, 5, 10 years are going to allow our portfolios to hopefully perform better than average. And this is why the COVID situation, while as terrible as it is, volatility is what you have to have, Matt, if you want to achieve long-term return. You have to allow volatility to take advantage. You have to allow that volatility to happen without being emotional about it, so you can take advantage of the opportunities that are going to be set forth before you in that process.
I was taking a page from one of our podcasts, to be honest, Mark, and I was sitting down with my kids. I've got 17 seniors in high school. We were talking about their portfolio, right? So we were talking about what they own. And I looked at them and I said, I want you guys to look at this and I want you to tell me if you know who these companies are. And they're like, yeah, I do know who all of these companies are. I said, so the difference between the way that we're, you know, allocating your 529 plans or some of the different things that we have is because I want you, every time you are riding around and you see whatever, I own part of that, right? Or every time you're digitally on something, you know that you own part of that. And I love the fact that when you're saying these, you know, somewhat household names, and when you're talking about transparency and totally knowing what you own and why you own it, you should have seen the level of understanding on my kids' faces. And I'm just going to digress here just for a moment. So for those of you who have kids, those of you who know that your kids are going to inherit a substantial amount of money, really, truly being able to have them understand to invest with clarity is going to make them better investors longer term. This is my opinion, better investors longer term, because they're going to be able to truly understand that it isn't all about the progress. It's about the process to get there. Is that a fair statement?
Great. Great. It's perfect. I don't use this as much anymore, but I used to use the joke that back before the financial crisis happened, people were complaining about how high oil prices were. And I said, you know what? If you're concerned about oil prices, go buy the energy stocks. And they look at you like, why would I do that? Well, it's a hedge. In other words, if energy prices are going up, your stocks should, in theory, be going up with that, right? And so I always used to use this analogy. I'm probably going to get it wrong because I haven't used it for years. But at one time, we owned Sam Adams. We owned Visa. We owned oil stocks. And we owned Aetna, which, you know, eventually was bought. And I used to say, I went to the doctor. I got a physical. I have Aetna insurance. I was super excited about it. But on the way to the doctor's office, I was low on gas. So I just went to the energy company that we own. I bought my gas. I swiped my Visa card. And to celebrate my great health, I had a Sam Adams for dinner. Now, it's kind of an absurd analogy, but how true is it?
Totally.
Right? Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that I shop at Nordstrom, so do I buy Nordstrom stock, right? Or Fossil or whatever clothing stores are out there now. The bottom line is you want to know what you own and why you own it, but you also want to understand your buy discipline and your sell discipline in the companies that you are going to own. And most importantly, make sure that you have the appropriate asset allocation strategy, because not if, but when the next 30% correction comes around, your allocation is put in a space where you're able to adjust your portfolio accordingly to take advantage of those opportunities that come around. And of course, you've heard me say this before, and people have said this to me before during the financial crisis. The markets were doing okay at the start of this year. Our portfolios were up probably 6%, which was pretty good at the start of the year in February relative to everything that was going on. And we were fully invested for the most part. And then COVID hit. And people were asking these questions like, how can you take advantage of volatility if you're fully invested? And my response to that is, you better be fully invested. And if you're appropriate asset allocated, you always have the ability to take advantage of volatility. It's an important phrase.
I remember like 7-8 months ago, I totally thought I was going to get you on that question, because I'm always trying to get you, right? And I remember saying that because you're like, you know, you take advantage of things when they're, you know, when they're on sale. And I'm like, well, how can you do that if you're fully invested? And you had that explanation. And I was like, damn it, I almost got him. Now, to wrap up today's podcast, I have a weird question. And I guess part of this just comes from, I don't really understand. Why would you trademark this? I mean, that seems interesting to me. I mean, I know that you are fiercely protective of your intellectual property, because I'll ask you to go under the hood and you'll be like, I'm going to go about this deep and then I'm going to stop because I'm not going to tell you anything else. But let's talk about your rationale behind trademarking this and what you hope that's going to do for you and the company in the future.
Actually, that's a really good question. I think that the bottom line reason why I decided to trademark Process Before Progress is because investing with clarity is a result of Process Before Progress. It doesn't start with investing with clarity. It starts with process. And with process comes the progress. What investing with clarity does is it provides the pipeline, it provides the roadway, it provides the behavioral, if you will, foundation to stick to that process and therefore get progress. And we talk about the Dalbar study that comes out every year. It talks about how unsuccessful investors are. And even today, as we're doing this podcast, the trillions of dollars sitting in cash, now the S&P and the Dow, we're in August here, are now trading at all-time highs. And during COVID, everyone was thinking the world was going to still fall. Bullish sentiment has been at historical lows. By the way, there is a multitude of indicators that we look at in our proprietary modeling that we have when we make our decisions. So we just don't make decisions off the cuff. But that being said, I think about a company like Zest, who we've invested in for a long time, and the stock has been performing extremely poorly. But if you continued to strategically cost average into it, if you felt that the long-term fundamentals hadn't changed, if your buy discipline hadn't changed, your sell discipline hadn't changed, you would have been able to buy that stock at much lower prices, reducing your basis, not only to see that stock trading at a multi-year high. These are the things that, and by the way, while it was down or while it was up, it shouldn't be having that dramatic of an impact on your overall portfolio. That is the process that brings you the progress. And so because process is so important, it has to be trademarked. I don't ever remember a time, Matt, where an investor came to me. You know, I don't sit down with investors at all much anymore. We have advisors and that kind of thing. But when I used to have clients and I would sit down with clients and talk about their portfolio and their planning and that sort of thing, or when they were interviewing me, they would always ask me what my academic background was. Do you have a CFA? Do you have a CFP? And of course, I'd always say, shoot, I just learned how to spell CFP yesterday. Credentials you have, in my opinion, are not as important as the understanding of the process that you use to make the decisions to help your clients accomplish those goals. And I really think that the more an investor understands investing with clarity, the more they understand about our process, the more they understand about all the aspects of strategic cost averaging, buy discipline, sell discipline, investment philosophy, strategy, flexibility, transparency, yada, yada, all those things, right? I believe I just don't know how it could not enhance your ability to invest with success.
That was a darn tootin' good way to end up this podcast here, my friend.
Well, thanks, Biggie.
Yeah. Is there anything coming out? You had said that you had a quarterly thing coming out, or you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, sure. Our second quarter 2020 update just came out. They can go to investwithclarity.com and download it if they'd like to do that. And I'm sure they'll find lots of information put together by our research team. And hopefully you can find some clarity in that and helping you invest with success.
And please make sure that you check out Mark Pearson on social media. The sort of stuff that he posts on a regular basis is it's just very mindful, right? It gives you the feeling that you're listening to somebody who not only cares about what's going on long term, but also has a really strong foundation and a great discipline to hopefully help make the best investment decisions that he can make for you so you can reach your financial goals. If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time we come out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on that listening device of yours. And if you know somebody who really does want to know a little bit more about the process that's going on here at Nepsis with Invest with Clarity, make sure you share this podcast. Mark went a little more under the hood than he normally does, so maybe you should share this with some of your friends and maybe even some of your advisors to maybe have them wake up and answer some great questions. You know, how do you feel about this podcast, Mrs. Advisor? And then see what their responses are. So for everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.